Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Murder with Cinnamon Scones by Karen Rose Smith. Narrated by C.S. E. Cooney. Chapter 1. The Victorian house with its gray siding and white gingerbread trim loomed in front of Daisy Swanson as she and Tessa Miller approached it. The January darkness had wrapped around the town of Willow Creek, Pennsylvania, early tonight, with a cloudy pewter sky before sunset and the prediction of snow later. Daisy wasn't sure she should have let Tessa talk her into coming here to Revelations Art Gallery with her, after hours. But Tessa was the chef and kitchen manager at Daisy's Tea Garden, and Daisy's best friend. They'd been confidants since high school. Still, Daisy voiced her concern as a gust of wind blew her wavy, shoulder-length blonde hair across her cheek. She brushed it behind her ear, thinking she should have worn her hat. The temperature was below freezing.
"I don't know if I should have come with you."
Walking along the side of the house to the back door of Revelations, Tessa assured her, "I'm just going to pick up my sketchbook and leave your cinnamon scones on Reese's desk." Tessa had been dating Reese Masemer, the owner of Revelations Art Gallery, since her show in October. She'd left her sketchbook there when she'd stopped in to have lunch with him. Tessa went on, "You know you want to see the quilt display Reese set up. Quilt Lovers Weekend is coming up in a little over 3 weeks. I'm sure Reese won't mind you being in the gallery with me. He knows you and I are close friends." Without hesitation, Tessa turned the key in the lock, stepped inside, and pressed in a security code. The long braid that kept her caramel-colored hair relatively confined swished across the back of her purple down jacket as she switched on a light. "He trusts me with the key and the code now." And Daisy knew why. Often Tessa spent the night with Reese in his apartment upstairs. Even in the dim light, Daisy could see Tessa blush a little. Her friend's relationship with Reese was fairly new, and Daisy wasn't sure what to think about it yet. She stepped inside with Tessa and looked around at the office. It was business messy, with a few paintings positioned on easels and art books spread across a large maple desk. Papers, invoices, and such were scattered over the surface of the desk, too. A computer station sat at the far wall, and the computer was off. At least it looked as if it was off, but it could have just been sleeping, Daisy supposed. Tessa's sketchbook rested on the corner.
"I'm surprised you and Reese aren't out on a date tonight," Daisy said. Reese and Tessa had been spending most evenings together.
Approaching the desk, Tessa set the foil-wrapped package of cinnamon scones there and picked up her sketchbook. "He has a meeting with a client tonight in York, and he said he won't be back until late." Willow Creek, in the heart of Lancaster County, was close to Lancaster as well as York, making it an ideal small town with other accessible services close by. "I am interested in the quilts display." Daisy unzipped the first few inches of her fleece jacket, patterned with cats. "Especially if Reese has any album quilts. But then I want to get home." "Vi only has a few more days at home before returning to college, doesn't she?" Tessa asked. Her friend knew how much Daisy had missed her older daughter. "Yes, and I want to spend as much time with her as I can. And Jazzy." Her 15-year-old had had a lot on her plate the past 6 months. Not only had she missed her sister, Violet, who had gone off to college, but as an adoptee, Jazzy had decided to search for her birth parents. After weeks of silent, secretive behavior in the fall, Jazzy had finally confided in Daisy. She knew her girls missed their father, who had died 3 years ago, and Jazzy particularly had been close to Ryan. Putting her own feelings about the search aside, she'd aided Jazzy's efforts to find her birth mother. Now Daisy wanted to be available to her younger daughter because Jazzy had an upcoming visit planned for this Sunday with Portia Smith Harding.
Jazzy might want to talk about it. Although her daughter had spoken with Portia on the phone, she hadn't seen her face to face since their first meeting in October.
"Come on," Tessa said, disrupting Daisy's thoughts. Crossing to the doorway that led into the other rooms of the gallery, Tessa paused. When Rhys had bought the old Victorian to use for the art gallery, he'd kept its charm and only done renovations that would help show off work in the gallery. Now Tessa guided Daisy through a dark room into a larger one, where ambient light glowed from a track along the ceiling.
"I have to find the light switch," Tessa said.
Daisy stayed perfectly still so she didn't inadvertently knock an elbow into an art piece. Most of the work Rhys carried was from new artists, but some of it was still valuable. There was an eerie quality about the Victorian that manifested in several ways. A light mustiness always floated in the air. Did that come from the house being over 150 years old? Possibly. Or perhaps from the antiques that Rhys used for display tables. The floorboards, although they had been refinished to their original character, creaked. It was hard to find one that didn't. She and Tessa stood in one of the rooms toward the back of the house. As she peered through the duskiness to the front room, it looked as if shadows appeared to be waving in the streetlights. Those were tree branches swaying in front of the huge bay window. When there was a bump and swish, as if a branch had brushed against the side of the house, Daisy jumped. She wasn't a nervous person, only anxious when she had concerns for her daughters. But this gallery, devoid of patrons, was giving her the creeps. Finally, Tessa found the light switch. An overhead light glowed mildly over the room. Daisy knew Rhys didn't want glaring illumination to disturb the atmosphere of his displays or damage any of the works.
"Over there."
Tessa pointed to a corner where Daisy could see quilt stands and several quilts folded over chairs. Another was spread across a table. The array drew her to it as she forgot all about the eeriness of the Victorian house. She went straight for one of the quilt stands where she recognized an album quilt. It was beautiful. The tag on the quilt read, "Baltimore Album Quilt."
"Isn't this gorgeous?" she whispered.
Tessa came up beside her.
"Rhys said that one's worth about $14,000.
"Just look at this fine needlework."
"It's hard to believe it's from the 19th century. I can't imagine anyone sewing so evenly with those tiny stitches."
"This is appliqué and reverse appliqué, embroidery and more padded appliqué that makes up the three-dimensional blocks. I really should learn to quilt. Rachel Fisher teaches it." Rachel and Levi Fisher, friends of Daisy's, owned Quilts and Notions. They not only sold quilts, but cloth and sewing supplies, too.
"Rhys believes the Quilt Lovers' Weekend will bring in the most business for Rachel and Levi."
Daisy knew the Amish family well. Although she'd moved away from Willow Creek after college, she remembered her childhood as if it was yesterday. Rachel's parents had grown shrubs and trees for Daisy's mom and dad to sell at their nursery, Gallagher's Garden Corner. So Daisy had spent time on that farm. She admired the family and their Amish way of life. Reluctantly, she moved away from the Baltimore album quilt to study another. Suddenly, she heard a noise coming from another room. It didn't emanate from the office or the front gallery. If she remembered the downstairs layout correctly, it was coming from the stairs that led to the second floor.
"Someone else can't be here," Tessa murmured,
stepping toward a sculpture of an old man sitting on a tree stump. She picked it up as if she intended to hit someone with it. Daisy held her breath, unsure what Tessa would do next. Tessa hadn't yet taken a step when Rhys appeared in the doorway. They were as surprised as he was. Rhys Mesmer wasn't quite 6 feet tall, but he was fit and lean. At 40-something, his hair was sandy brown, thick and long. It shaggily splayed over his denim shirt collar. His dark brown eyes landed on Daisy and Tessa.
His face, which had seemed too pale, showed a little more color.
Tessa spoke first.
"What are you doing here? I thought you had dinner and a meeting with a client."
Appearing a bit shaken, Reese shrugged.
Then he smiled.
"I thought I had intruders. I'm glad to see it's the two of you. I was worried I might have to invest in a new alarm system."
Crossing to Tessa, he wrapped his arm around her waist.
"My client canceled, so I was spending the evening working on my laptop upstairs. I have a lot to catch up on. Invoices to input from the sales over the holidays."
He wiggled his brows at Tessa.
"Including two of your paintings that sold. I'm ready for you to bring more to the gallery."
Daisy's woman's intuition told her that Reese was trying to distract Tessa from the fact that he was still here and hadn't told her. Her friend, a bit besotted by her relationship with him, let him do it.
"I came over to bring some of those cinnamon scones you like so much and pick up my sketchbook. The scones are on your desk. I asked Daisy along because I knew she'd like to see the quilts before we had to scramble through people to view them. They're going to be a big draw."
"I suspect they will be," he agreed. "Those album quilts are a real find. But that's another reason I'm concerned about security."
He did seem troubled, Daisy thought. But did his concern really have to do with the album quilts? Reese gave Tessa another squeeze.
"Remember, we're going to have a candlelit dinner in York on Saturday evening. Is that still good for you?"
"It is, but I hope we can spend some time together before that. Are we still on for dinner tomorrow evening?"
"We are."
With Reese and Tessa gazing into each other's eyes, Daisy felt like the proverbial fifth wheel. This was Wednesday. She imagined Tessa would be staying overnight again before Saturday.
"I'll let you and Tessa say a proper good night."
Crossing the room, she headed for the office and the outside back door. It wasn't long before Tessa joined her, rosy-cheeked and looking just kissed. However, she was quiet as they left the gallery and closed the door. Once outside, she glanced up at the apartment on the second floor where all the blinds were drawn. No light escaped. Had Reese really been working up there? A cold wind buffeted them. Daisy pulled the zipper on her jacket up to her neck and turned toward the tea garden where her car was parked. Tessa took a few quick steps to keep up and asked,
"Do you think Reese rushed us out?"
In spite of the wind, Daisy stopped.
"What's on your mind?"
"Reese's assistant, Chloe Laird, flirts with him constantly. What if she's been doing more than flirting? What if she was upstairs with him?"
Daisy watched as Tessa took another look up at the second floor.
"Are you saying you don't trust Reese?"
"You know it's hard for me to trust anyone."
Daisy did know that, but before they could delve into that subject, Tessa changed it.
"We're going to be passing Woods. We could stop in and say hi to Jonas."
Tessa was aware that Daisy and Jonas Groft had spent time together. Daisy enjoyed his company and, if she had to admit it, more than enjoyed it. However, Jonas had closed his shop from Christmas to New Year's and gone to Philadelphia to spend the holidays with good friends. They'd spent New Year's Eve together, though, with her girls. That was a few days ago. Since then, she hadn't heard from him. She wasn't sure she should visit Woods because she didn't want to push. Because of his background as a former Philadelphia detective, Jonas had gotten pulled into her life to help Jazzy search for her birth mother. It was quite possible he didn't want a serious relationship. To be honest, she wasn't sure she did. Still, Tessa caught her arm and pulled her along, saying,
"Come on, you've got to take risks in your life. You don't very often.
Opening the tea garden with my aunt was a risk." After her husband had died, she'd returned to her hometown to start over. She and her aunt Iris had bought a house to establish Daisy's tea garden, and Daisy had also renovated an old barn where she and the girls now lived.
"Your aunt knows more about tea than Wikipedia. and the two of you created a place where everybody comes to chat and relax, eat good food, and drink the best tea. How could it have missed?
It still could. You know the track record with small businesses?
I do, but we're growing. We hired more help.
When you become a rich and famous artist, you won't want to be my kitchen manager. With a frown, Tessa studied Daisy.
If I ever do become rich and famous, I'll still be your best friend. And if I have to quit my job, I would find you the best kitchen manager on the face of the earth.
Now that reassures me, Daisy said wryly as they stood in front of Woods.
Come on,
Tessa urged again, opening the door and pulling Daisy inside.
At least we'll get warm for a few minutes.
Daisy just shook her head and gave in to the inevitable enthusiasm Tessa usually exhibited. However, to her relief, Jonas was nowhere in sight within the store. Elijah Byler was. He was an Amish woodworker who sold furniture through Jonas's shop. In his 40s, Elijah wore black pants with suspenders and a dark blue shirt. His beard signified he was married.
"Good evening, ladies,"
Elijah said with a broad, welcoming smile.
"Evening, Elijah. Is Jonas around?"
Daisy asked.
"No, he went searching for reclaimed wood. He's thinking about adding a line of furniture created from it."
"I've seen furniture crafted from reclaimed wood on those building shows on the Home and Garden Channel," Daisy recalled. "They're beautiful."
Elijah went to the counter in the back of the store and reached underneath. After he brought out a few sketches, he carried them to Daisy and Tessa.
"Would you like to look at these? They're what Jonas has in mind."
When Daisy had renovated the old barn that she now called home, she'd included an island in her kitchen. She'd examined many in her search for the best one for her use and was familiar with the styles. She admired the plans for islands that Jonas had designed, as well as those for a sideboard table and a practical desk.
"You and Jonas are both very talented," Daisy said, meaning it.
A humble man, like most Amish, Elijah reddened at her praise.
"Like me, Jonas takes pleasure in bringing the real nature of wood to life."
"I'm looking forward to seeing what the two of you come up with," Daisy assured him. She glanced at Tessa.
"We'd better go. I want to get home to the girls."
"I'll tell Jonas you stopped in,"
Elijah assured them.
Daisy wasn't certain she wanted him to do that, but she kept silent. After a round of goodbyes, she and Tessa left Woods. They walked briskly up the street. In front of Daisy's tea garden, they paused and glanced at their Victorian. The tea garden took up the first floor. Tessa lived in the second-floor apartment and used the attic for painting. A light that came on at dusk and went off at dawn glowed on the front porch. It illuminated the pale green exterior with its white and yellow trim. On the first floor, Daisy and her aunt had furnished the be-served-or-buy-it-to-go room with oak glass-top tables. She'd painted the walls the palest green. A second tea room on the first floor was a spillover area. It was also the room they used when they took reservations and served afternoon tea by appointment. That room's walls were the palest yellow. Daisy's office was located to the rear of the tea room, and the kitchen spread behind the walk-in room. They also had a side patio where they served customers outside, weather permitting. A private parking area for Daisy's, her aunt's, and Tessa's vehicles ran in back of the Victorian.
"Business is still good,"
Tessa reminded her.
"Even though it's early January and the tourist season has slowed down, that means the community is embracing Daisy's and the tea garden is an integral part of the area."
"I hope that's what it means. The uptick in business could still be from the notoriety of the murder that happened here." Daisy's tea garden had been the scene of a murder in the fall, and there had been publicity from that with local TV coverage, as well as discussions on online blogs.
"Foster has really helped to spread the word about Daisy's tea garden on social media, too," Tessa added. "You have to give him credit for that."
Foster Cranshaw was a college student Daisy had taken on when they'd gotten busier.
He and Violet dated when she was home, and Daisy had mixed feelings about that. Yes, she wanted Violet involved in relationships, so eventually she could find a permanent life partner. Daisy was sure marriage and vows would mean as much to her daughters as they had to her and Ryan. On the other hand, Violet was still young, and she hoped her oldest and Foster weren't too serious. "Foster has been a huge help," Daisy agreed. "I don't know what we'd do without him. He has a way with customers, and his tech skills are a godsend." They were walking along the lane that led to the private parking lot when a shrieking alarm pierced the silence of the night. Tessa spun around toward the direction from which they'd come.
"That sounds like it's coming from Revelations."
The alarm was so loud and piercing that Daisy supposed it could have come from any of the businesses along their street. But she followed Tessa as she raced down the sidewalk. Daisy wasn't going to abandon her friend now. As Tessa streaked past a candle shop, an insurance office, a store that sold hand-sewn purses and travel bags, as well as Woods, Daisy kept up with her pace. Elijah had come out of Woods and was staring down the street, too. Tessa ran by him, and so did Daisy, realizing now that Tessa had been right. It was the alarm from Revelations that had sounded. Running along the side of the building to the back entrance, Tessa didn't hesitate to go inside when she saw the door was opened. Daisy called after her, "Tessa, wait! We don't know what's happened. It could be a fire, or anything!" But Tessa didn't wait. And when Daisy ran inside and caught up with her, she saw Tessa holding up Reese, who leaned heavily on her. There was blood on his forehead and down the side of his face. Daisy pulled out her phone to call 911. Reese saw her do it and held up his hand.
"You don't need to call anyone. The alarm alerted the PD. They'll be here."
Tessa led Reese to a wooden captain's chair and he flopped into it. "What happened?" Daisy asked. Certainly, Reese didn't do that to himself. Could someone still be in the gallery?
"An intruder got in before I reset the alarm. He hit me and escaped. I managed to smack one of the panic buttons."
Reese had definitely been hurt by someone. Papers from the desk were strewn across the floor. But something about his story didn't seem to ring true. How could anyone have known the alarm was off? Why hadn't Reese reset the alarm after she and Tessa had left? Had a break-in really occurred? Or had something else happened that Reese didn't want anyone to know about? Chapter 2. Daisy had a logical mind, barring emotions getting in the way. After all, she was a mom. She ran a business. She used self-talk to convince herself that her mother didn't like her sister best. Therefore, she had a pretty good woman's intuition meter when it came to separating a lie from the truth. Reese's story didn't make sense. Reese was a business owner and somewhat influential in Willow Creek. Daisy had attended Chamber of Commerce meetings where Reese had gotten things done. His story just didn't ring true. Not only patrol officers arrived on the scene. No, the chief had sent Detective Rappaport to investigate whatever had happened. Morris Rappaport and Daisy had crossed paths before. He wasn't especially fond of her or her aunt, though the three of them had made a type of peace at the conclusion of his last murder investigation. But tonight he looked as grumpy as usual and not at all happy to see Daisy. He'd questioned Reese, and now he approached her and Tessa. He looked from one of them to the other as if he thought about separating them to question them. Daisy said amiably, "Detective Rappaport, it's good to see you again."
"Is it?"
he asked, running his hand through his thick, blonde, gray hair.
"I was off duty when the chief called me in. This doesn't seem worthy of my time."
Already, Daisy could sense Tessa's outrage.
"Reese was hurt. What do you mean it's not worth your time? Someone could have killed him."
In his 50s, Rappaport had grooves along his mouth and deep lines on his face. He gave Tessa a steady look.
Tell me, Miss Miller, what you and Mrs. Swanson have to do with all of this?
We told the patrol officers why we were here earlier and why we're here now, Tessa said, crossing her arms across her chest. Rappaport studied his notebook.
Indeed you did. Something about bringing cinnamon scones to Mr. Masimer? It seems an odd reason to be here, don't you think? Does Daisy's Tea Garden now have delivery service?
In her dealings with Detective Rappaport in the past, she'd learned it didn't do any good for them to antagonize him. She laid her hand on Tessa's arm, hoping to quiet her. Tessa and Reese are dating, she said calmly, looking Rappaport in the eye. Tessa knows he likes my scones, and she suspected I'd like to see the quilt display. She'd also forgotten her sketchbook here and wanted to retrieve that.
Quilt display?
Rappaport's eyebrows arched as he focused on that part of her explanation. Reese is displaying antique quilts in preparation for Quilt Lovers Weekend in 3 weeks. He felt it would help draw in business. The Baltimore album quilt especially is very valuable.
I know Amish quilts run up a good sum of money,
the detective said.
But just how valuable could a quilt be?
Tessa's hackles were up again. She pointed toward the quilt stands in the other room. One of those quilts in there is worth close to $14,000. That's probably why an intruder broke in. Rappaport looked to Daisy.
Is she right about that?
Tessa knows more about it than I do. She helped Reese with the display. If you ask him, he can tell you what they're worth. But, yes, a Baltimore album quilt like the one he has displayed can be worth thousands of dollars.
You grew up in Willow Creek, didn't you?
Rappaport asked Daisy. Remembering what Jonas Groft had advised her last time she dealt with the Willow Creek Police Department, she answered with as little explanation as possible. I did.
So you've been around the quilts and Amish all your life?
I have. He looked a little perturbed at her short answers. They had been through this before when she'd had a lawyer advising her. Rappaport cut his gaze toward Tessa again.
So, how long have you and Masimer been dating?
What does that have to do with someone hitting him on the head? Tessa asked tersely.
I'm asking the questions,
Rappaport reminded her imperiously. Daisy tried to communicate to Tessa without words that she'd be better off just answering the detective's questions. She must have gotten through to her telepathically because Tessa said, "We got to know each other when he showed my work here in the fall. Afterward, we began dating."
"A few months, then," Rappaport said, summing it up.
"That's right," Tessa answered.
"So, let me get this straight. Kravitz over there told me you have a key to this place, that you unlocked the door, pressed in the security code to disarm the alarm, and then what? Give me a play-by-play."
Because they'd gone through this with the patrol officers, Tessa answered a little impatiently. "I put the scones on Reese's desk, picked up my sketchbook, and then Daisy and I went to look at the quilts. While we were admiring them, we heard a noise. I didn't expect Reese to be here because he said he was having a meeting with a client. It turns out his client canceled and he was working upstairs, so when he heard us down here, he came down."
"And he found the two of you with the quilts."
Daisy found herself feeling a little huffy, too. He made it sound as if they'd been doing something sinister. "We were admiring the workmanship on the quilts," Daisy explained. "That's when we heard Reese come down, but we didn't know it was him."
"So what did you do?"
Rappaport asked. "I picked up that sculpture over there in case there was an intruder," Tessa said. "But then Reese stood in the doorway and we saw it was him. That was it. After he and I talked about dinner plans, Daisy and I left."
"But you came back," Rappaport said almost accusingly.
Now Daisy was getting impatient. "We came running back when we heard the alarm go off. We didn't know what had happened."
"Why would you come running back here when a robbery could have been in progress?"
"Don't be so dense," Tessa said. "I love..." She stopped. "I care about Reese. I didn't know what might have happened. It could have been a fire. He could have hit a panic button by mistake.
Panic button?
It's an art gallery, Detective. He brings in valuable work.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?